Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
John Canzano.
He's good. He's good. He says his opinion and it's usually right on, I think.
Love him.
That guy's awesome, man. Absolutely love him.
He's dead sexy.
Best radio journalist there is around. Tells it like it is. And he's just right on point. He's sharp, man. Love John Canzano.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
Hate him.
Not a big fan.
Hate him. Two opinionated.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. Most of his opinions I don't really agree with.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
Love to hate him.
Sometimes I think he's all right, and sometimes I think he's a lousy writer.
I'll read his column, but I am not a fan of John Canzano.
Bald-faced truth teller.
I really don't like John Canzano.
Who is he to judge?
I like that he's controversial, I guess.
Pretty good. He's not afraid to call people on their crap.
You love him or you hate him.
It's a love-hate relationship.
I love John Canzano. He's a cool dude.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
Well, the Blazers got busy buying and selling over the weekend and made it official today. The trade of Mason Plumlee to Denver. We're going to talk about it, and I want to know what you're buying and what you're selling when it comes to this trade, and I'll do that as we do every show. And Ben Golliver, who covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated, will be joining us here momentarily to talk about the trades and what could be next for the Blazers. So if you're a Blazer fan, you're wondering, where is this all headed? We've got it for you on today's show, but we start right here.
Are you buying it?
I can't take it.
Or are you selling it?
We want it now!
Let the world know right now on The Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, here's my three things that I'm buying and selling today. And you can join me at 417-7575. Weigh in. First of all, the Blazers sell Mason Plumlee to Denver. That's what they did. They gave him up for Yusuf Nurkic, who is averaging about 8 points and six rebounds. Plus, they swap a future second for Memphis's first-round pick in this draft. Portland now holds three first-round draft picks, their own pick, Cleveland's pick in the first round, and also the Memphis pick that's top five protected. If the season ended today and the draft order was as the standings are, Portland would hold picks number 11, picks number 21, and picks number 27 in the draft. I am buying this trade.
Buy the market.
I like the trade, and I know people love Mason Plumlee, and it's nothing against Mason Plumlee, because I'm applauding what the Blazers are doing while also saying, Mason Plumlee, you were nothing but a professional as you go out the door. But the Blazers season was a dead end. It was going nowhere. You had to do something. I'm glad that they're getting active doing something. I like that they're going to hold three draft picks. So I'm buying the trade at face value. You give up on this season, which I think they're clearly doing. You give up on chasing and fighting with Denver for the eighth seed, and that's what Denver in part got in this deal. Denver gets to make the playoffs or gets a better shot at it. And I'm buying that the Blazers are looking at three teenaged kids who they're going to pick in the draft and say, hey, save this franchise. I buy that element of it. 417-7575. Do you buy the trade or do you sell the trade at face value? You tell me. Part two of this, though, also has to do with the trade. The guy in charge at one center court is Neil Olshey, and he is the general manager. And so there comes a question that's attached to this deal. You have in every draft, you look through every NBA draft in history, you've got 10 or 12 players that generally make a difference. They're good NBA players in every draft, about 10 or 12. Doesn't matter. They tell you it's a deep draft. They tell you it's a thin draft. At the end of it, 10 or 12 players end up mattering in every draft. The problem is you only hold one or two or three picks. You've got to pick the right one or two or three players or they don't matter. And Neil Olshey, as a drafter, will boast that he has picked Damian Lillard. He will boast that he has picked CJ McCollum. And there are about seven other players that he's picked that you could say, well, what about these guys? So Neil Olshay, I think he's hitting about 250 as a drafter, 300 maybe as a drafter, 270. But you tell me, here's part two. Do you buy or sell that Neil Olshay is the right guy to make those picks? Me?
Sell.
I have reasonable doubt that Olshay can pick the right players. I have reasonable doubt that he can attract free agents. The Blazers, if you think about it, are kind of in this predicament because of Neil Olshay. He's the guy who let LaMarcus Aldridge and Robin Lopez and Wesley Matthews get away, and he got nothing in return a couple summers ago. He just said, hey, LaMarcus didn't want to be here. This is the cost of doing business. It's better to start all the way over instead of trying to play from the middle. And yet, here he is, sitting squarely in the middle of the Western Conference, now making a deal, selling the future. And for Blazer fans who are wondering about, will Olshay's head roll? Will Terry Stotts be the fall guy? I was told by a Blazer source yesterday that prior to this trade going down, and yes, Paul Allen is involved in all of these deals. He has, you know, right of refusal on all the deals. He's heavily involved in sifting through things. And also, one caveat, Paul Allen loves a draft pick. He loves to draft. He loves draft day. It's his favorite time of year. I think it's more favorite to him than the playoffs, even, that he gets to go out and speculate and look at young players, and you get to pick who you're going to be with as an NBA owner. So Paul Allen, looking at this trade scenario with Denver a few days in front of the trade, cleared this deal with Coach Terry Stotts, I'm told. So this tells me that Paul Allen is not going to blow up Terry Stotts at the end of the season, that he's saying, hey, this isn't Stotts' fault, probably not Olshay's fault. This is just, hey, maybe making the playoffs last year and beating the Clippers in the first round wasn't a good thing. Maybe it set expectations too high. And that brings us to the third part of my buy and sell. Was making the playoffs and beating the Clippers the most responsible thing for all the disappointment that we've seen this season at One Center Court and with the Blazers?
I'll buy that for a dollar.
I'm buying that. I'm buying the idea that the expectations set by last year in a playoff series they probably shouldn't have won to one had Blake Griffin and Chris Paul not been hurt, that set up this season. The only way I'd sell it is if I'm somebody sitting back going, look at all the free agent money that was collected. Look at Myers Leonard. Look at Alan Crabb. Look at the signings in the offseason. They let Gerald Henderson get away. They brought in Evan Turner and he got hurt. So if you are somebody who is looking at those responsible, I am going to buy the idea that the expectations set by last season's playoff run have set the Blazers up and put them in a bad predicament and bad position. What else is responsible for that? You tell me at 417-7575. So weigh in on those three things. You have the floor. If you are buying or selling this trade, and those of you who love some Mason Plumlee are not going to like this trade. I've heard from a lot of people via email and on Twitter about people saying, you know what? This was a bad deal. This was one of the only guys that was trying hard, and I really like Mason Plumlee, and he was a tent pole for this team's success, whatever marginal success it was this year. Those people clearly not buying this deal, not buying the idea that you give up on Mason Plumlee. 417-7575 on that. Neil Olshay is the guy to solve it, guy to make the picks. I've got reasonable doubt there. I'm beginning to become skeptical that he knows better than other NBA GMs what to do. And I'm beginning to be skeptical that he is doing anything more than positioning himself for his next job by giving minutes to Alan Crabb and giving money to Alan Crabb and trying to set up Myers Leonard and Crabb and CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard for success by placing them and clearing bodies around them so that they can get minutes and opportunities. And it makes Neil Olshay look like a great drafter, that Lillard and McCollum have had such opportunities with nothing else around him. It makes him look like a good drafter, that his guy, Alan Crabb, got a $70 million contract. That was my draft pick. So I've got reasonable doubt, though, that this guy is the right GM to come in and make those three picks and get this franchise turned in the right direction. Because I think when you have no proof of performance, there's only one thing you can sell, and that is hope, the future. And the Blazers began selling that yesterday, and they will continue to sell that today. As the announcement came out that the trade is official, They're going to say one step backwards, two steps forward. That's going to be the spin from one center court. And you know what? I'm not buying that. And when it comes to buying and selling, 417-7575, you tell me what you're buying and what you're selling. Let's go out to the phones. Brady's in Portland. Brady, welcome to the show.
John, how you doing?
I'm all right. They make a deal. I'm glad they made a deal. It was a dead-end season.
Me too. I'm stoked. I was really getting this feeling, the worried feeling that we're just going to sit around and do nothing and, you know, have these expectations like, no, we haven't seen the ceiling of this team, but we have seen the ceiling. I do think that last year was a detriment. And I actually think that we're exactly where we should be in terms of our rebuild. You know, we were going to win 26 games. We had this fluky season where we played injured teams, not only during the playoffs, but during the regular season. And I think it just, if you look at where we should be in a rebuild where we took 80% of our starting lineup away, I think we're actually exactly where we should be. And also on this deal, I'm buying it. I love the deal. I like the talent. Actually, I like Nurkic a lot, but I also think, I mean, Plumlee was going to leave. Not many people are talking about it. Like, we were not going to keep him. We would have to pay him an absurd amount of money. And so essentially we sold Plumlee's last 2 months of playing for a young, talented 22-year-old beast from Bosnia and a first-round draft pick. I think that's a really, really good deal.
I think you're giving up the idea that you're going to be an 8 seed this year. You're going to fight for that 8 seed position because you're just not going to do it, making that kind of move and getting rid of Plumlee. I think it was one of the shots you had to be an 8 seed. But again, what was being the 8 seed in the Western Conference? It's a date with the Golden State Warriors. It's a quick exit from the first round. You lose draft position. So I don't mind that deal because if you're headed down a dead-end road, there's a reason why they put dead-end signs. Like, as you enter the dead-end road, they want you to know, hey, you could go down at a mile and a half. You can go down at a block. You can go down at 5 miles. But at the end of it, you're going to hit a dead-end. So if you're going to hit a dead-end, why not turn back now? And so I like the deal from that standpoint. It's a give-up on this season, and the caller's right. I said it last week. I said it the week before. We were talking about Mason Plumlee. Specifically, you've got Mark Bartlestein, who's his agent on the other side of this. He's played hardball with the Blazers to this point on Plumlee's contract. He, in that exclusive window, the Blazers had to re-sign him. Bartlestein said, nope, we'll take our chances on the open market. And that open market is going to probably put Mason Plumlee in the $50 to $60 to $70 million contract range. And if you're a Blazers fan, that's too much to pay for what Mason Plumlee gets you. 417-7575, Bob's in Hillsboro. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, John, I agree with some of what you say, not all the time, but here's the thing about Neil Olshey. He's a terrible GM. He signed Festus Ezeli, a guy with bad knees. That's his first biggest mistake going back from last offseason. He couldn't get any free agents. He signed a big guy with bum knees. He's draining Paul Allen's wallet. He's lucky he's got an owner that doesn't mind losing chump change because that's all that is to Paul Allen. But I don't think Paul Allen or Neil Olshey knows what the hell they're doing with this team. And I don't know that he's done making moves, so I guess we're in a wait-and-see mode. Maybe after this thing cleared today, maybe there's another thing. Maybe they're going to go get that guy in Philadelphia with the funny name.
Okafor.
Yeah. So, but I don't think Olshey, I don't think he's destined long here. I think he's just waiting until Mitch Kupchak retires, and then he's going to go try to put the shine on down there with the Buss family.
I appreciate the call, Bob, in Hillsboro. 417-7575 is the number. The thing at the end of this, and the thing that I keep coming back to, if you're looking at this from an organizational standpoint, is the involvement of Paul Allen. And every owner, I respect any owner, like if you owned an NBA team or a Major League Baseball team or an NFL team, and you're a sports fan and somebody who's interested in that team and you're a fan of that team as the owner, not just a business decision, then I would expect that you would have and want to have a vested interest in helping make decisions. And the problem is, you know, when I need a plumbing job done, I hire a plumber. Like, I may go down and start monkeying around with like landscaping or sprinklers or something like that. But if I need a plumbing job done in my house, I'm hiring a plumber. I'm not like replacing the the water heater myself. I'm not like going into the wall and taking out a piece of pipe and putting in a new pipe in my wall. I'm calling a plumber because I want it done right. I know I need a professional. The problem with having Paul Allen as your owner with the Blazers is that, you know, he's one of the richest men in the world and he thinks he knows basketball. You know, I read this New York Times piece the year that the Seahawks made the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl win, and I read this piece. It was a Q&A with Paul Allen in which he was talking about John Schneider, his general manager with the Seahawks, and I was fascinated by it because he talked about not knowing football and being humble enough to step out of the way and hire good people and go, you guys know better than I do. And the problem that I think that we're seeing, especially in this deal, and the only thing that troubles me about this deal is really, will they get the right guys in the end? But what also troubles me is that Paul Allen likes to be involved in the draft. He loves the draft. He loves Jimi Hendrix. He loves yachts. He likes to play music. He likes to go, you know, get on his helicopter and go to Antarctica and do whatever. He loves the Blazers, but he loves the draft. The draft is what it's about. And I think if you're an NBA owner who's not, I don't know what Paul's vertical is, but I guess it's probably, I would guess it's under 6 or 8 inches, maybe 4 inches of vertical jump from Paul Allen. Three? Can I get a three? Is he 3 inches of vertical? Like, what do you think Paul Allen's vertical is? What I think he gets off on is drafting freaky athletes and being the guy kind of behind the curtain who goes, oh, yeah, you know, I can't buy that vertical jump for myself, but I'm going to buy a guy in the draft that can do that. And that's what you do when you have that kind of stupid money. And so I think the problem he has in basketball is that he thinks he knows basketball. So if you look at what's going on with Paul Allen and the Blazers, I wonder if the problem really isn't that Neil Olshey is trying to give Paul Allen what he thinks he wants here in order to keep his own job, which is, hey, Paul, you're going to be super involved on draft day. You're going to have a chance to go out and make a bunch of picks. And, you know, you sit back and you go, okay, they're starting over. And that's going to be the pitch today. They're going to say one step back, two steps forward. And the problem is, as a Blazer fan, you've heard it. It's Groundhog Day. You're frustrated. They keep postponing the championship parade. Not only that, they're changing the parade route. They're going, well, we're going to go down to Pioneer Square and whatever. But also, we put the parade off to 2020. So as you look at what's going on with the Blazers, don't ignore the role and the influence of owner, the accidental billionaire, Paul Allen, in the background. Todd's in Gresham. Go ahead, Todd.
So you brought up a great conversation, but unfortunately, we've kind of been living this situation since 89. Paul Allen just is not a good owner. He's just not. He has his fingers into too many pots. And, you know, Larry Weinberger, the previous owner of the Blazers, did more with less and still turned a profit, and the whole city loved him. And, you know, if you take away Clyde and Kersey and Buck, who was San Luis, which was a Weinberg draft, if you take away Kerry Porter, you know, Paul Allen hasn't done squat with his own players. Those were all very Weinberg players. And it's just time for us to get a local owner like Larry Weinberg who can spend more attention to the Blazers that they deserve and the fans do. And nothing drives me up a wall more than hearing how much money he dumped into the Blazers. That was his own bipolar fault. And that's all I got to say on that.
I appreciate it, Todd and Gresham. Look, the problem is that the owner is involved. And the other problem is that we're now looking at, what is it, 3 19-year-old kids that are going to be asked to save the franchise if they keep the draft picks. And I do think they'll keep most of the draft picks. People keep saying they could trade all 3 picks. I don't think Paul Allen's going to want to give up 3 first-round picks. This is what he does. He gets off on this. To him, this is exciting. There's this deep draft, and we're going to be involved in it. I got to hear from the Blazer fans, though. Gliss is here. Kiki's here. Mason Plumlee. Buying or selling this trade at face value? Go.
Well, I have to buy it. I don't like it, but I have to buy it because I have to think that, you know, again, we're going against Golden State and you have to look for the future. It's not going to happen this year. So I'm sad, though.
You liked him.
I do. I do. I think he's actually playing the best basketball. He and CJ are playing the best basketball right now, and they have been for weeks.
Do you buy the idea that Neil Olshay's the right guy to make the picks, or do you kind of go, ooh, is he going to get this right, or how are they going to mess this up?
You know, look, I don't pretend to know the back end of how all that works, and frankly, I just don't know. I don't know, because you just don't know. It's like gambling. The way that I look at picking players is gambling, because you never know how they're going to develop. You can have an idea. I mean, look at Steph Curry. People had no idea he was going to be who he turned out to be. So I think I have a little bit more latitude than you do, but it's a tough job for sure.
Bliss, you buying the trade?
Yeah, I'm buying it. Obviously, we brought him up, I think, last week about one of the guys that you could potentially get rid of because of the fact that he is going to get paid and the Blazers aren't going to be able to afford him. So I like the fact that they got draft picks. We'll see if this guy, I don't know if he is any long-term solution, but yeah, they get draft picks, and I'm not convinced that they don't make another move in the next 10 days, though.
I do think they'll make other moves. I just don't think they're going to give up. Like, people are saying, okay, they've got these picks now. Are they going to turn around and trade these picks for players and get better for right now? I think that there's a long shot on that, and I think Paul's going to want to hoard those picks, given that everybody's saying what a great draft it is. His scouts are telling him what a great draft it is. His general manager is saying, I'm the right guy to do this. Look, I picked CJ. I picked Dame. And people are going, look, you've got three of the top 30 picks, three of the top 27 picks potentially. And by the way, Cleveland's pick is really a glorified second-round pick because it's going to be at the very end of the first round. But still, you've got three picks there. I like that. But I think Festus Ezeli's in trouble of having to pack his bags. I think if you're a Blazer fan, you look at Alan Crabb and you go, okay, would he fit with a contender? And don't dismiss the possibility that they look at either CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, which I thought would be blasphemy, right, in the eyes of Neil Olshay. But if Olshay has to save himself, I think he'll do anything. Ben Golliver covers the NBA for Sports Illustrated, and he's next. Yeah, I want to shoot, baby, shoot.
The bow-legged one. Yeah. What's your name? Damn, babe. That sounds sexy. Here I go again. Okay. Girls, what's my weakness?
Hey, it's Greg Oden, and you're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on The Game.
Look, if I'm driving a car and we come to a down a road, let's just say it's a snowy road and there's a dead end sign. Do I keep going down the road until I hit the dead end, or do I go, ah, this is a dead end, let me turn this around? And if you're sitting in the passenger seat and I start to turn around, you go, you don't go, what are you doing? Car was driving so nice. You go, oh, it's a dead end. So the Blazers were headed toward a dead end this season. They make a deal. I like that they made a deal. I've got reasonable doubt that Neil Olshay can pick three teenaged kids that are going to save the franchise. I want you to weigh in and tell me what you thought of the trade and whether or not you think Olshay's the right guy to fix it. 417-7575. Our next guest, freaking guest of the show. We love him. You know him. Ben Golliver, Sports Illustrated Open Floor Podcast, joins us now. Ben Golliver, how are you?
Good, John. How's it going?
Going well. What'd you think when you heard Olshay made a deal?
Well, you know, we kind of thought Mason Plumlee was out, right?
I mean,
there wasn't quite enough money to go around, and he definitely seemed like he was the one guy who was going to get stuck and not get paid. So that part wasn't surprising. You know, what was maybe a little surprising was he was potentially a lever to get an upgrade at center, right? Like, if you put Plumlee into a package, maybe you can get a better center, a better starting center back, a more defensive-minded center. Maybe you have to throw in some draft picks along with him, you know, toss in another contract. I mean, that was one of your pieces that actually had some trade value. And now he goes out for a draft pick. And to me, a guy in Nurkic, you know, I don't think Nurkic can really play. And I think he's a pretty clear downgrade from Plumlee. So you didn't really accomplish the main goal. Now, there's still time to, you know, potentially target another center. I think if you're the Blazers, you know, you've got multiple extra picks. You know, you still got a contract that you could potentially move with Ezeli. You know, you got some other players who are maybe a little bit redundant on the wing there that you could try to put into a package. But this doesn't really get them closer to what they needed, which is a center who can kind of cover up for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And, you know, one thing I'd say for people who get really excited about that draft pick, you know, the Blazers needed a center 2 years ago. They needed a center last year. They don't need a center 3 years from now, whenever that draft pick is going to be ready to play. And so how helpful is that draft pick to their current planning if they can't turn that into a player who's ready to go right now? That's my big question.
Paul Allen loves the draft. You know it. You've been around him. His eyes light up. It's like Jimi Hendrix, space travel, and the draft. I mean, that's what gets Paul going. I keep hearing people say, Ben, oh, they're going to trade these picks. And I look at Paul and I go, no way. No way is Paul going to trade these picks.
Well, it's tricky. I mean, what does he want more, the picks, or does he want to save a little bit of money on his bloated payroll, right? Because I think part of the reason why you accumulate extra first-round picks is if you need to get rid of bad contracts, and you got to toss those picks along with your bad contracts to get rid of them, right? So it depends on how much buyer's remorse he has. I mean, is he sick of looking at, you know, Evan Turner and Alan Crabb getting paid all that money to have, you know, a fairly limited impact on wins and losses? And you know, that could be absolutely a way that those picks go out the door, is, you know, kind of a sweetener to dump some money. But no, in general, I agree with you. I mean, he always wants to be a player on draft night, and it's just kind of a question of how big of a player. I mean, don't you think three first round picks for this team, when you've got guys like CJ and Damian, and even in Aminu and some other core guys who are all sort of, you know, past the youth stage, right? I mean, these guys are kind of ready to win now. You flash back to September. I mean, the whole mantra was, you know, try to make a deep playoff push in a best case scenario. And clearly that didn't happen. This just doesn't really strike me as a team that's in rebuild through the draft mode right now. And I think they're going to maybe have to hedge against Paul's interest on the young players, because they've got a lot of really expensive guys on the roster who expect to win right now.
Is there a guy or two that jumps out at you as, this is a player, despite the contract, they could trade? And I'll throw out Alan Crabb, Festus Ezeli. Evan Turner's obviously hurt, so he's out of there. Myers Leonard. Which of those guys do you think on the open market would command the most interest?
I think for sure, because you know it's been demonstrated, right? I mean, their team was out there trying to compete for his services last summer, and you know, his age, his general profile in terms of, you know, being more of a complementary player rather than sort of a ball dominant guy. He's got a, you know, pretty clean fit around, you know, lots of different offensive systems in terms of not needing to be the main guy. And then, you know, youth and scoring potential. I think those are things that people look for. So I think he's probably their top trade asset at this point. But again, I think it goes back to a fundamental directional question, which I don't really know if that was answered by this past trade with Tully, because, you know, they take a step back. I mean, this is the kind of move that could potentially put Denver into that number eight seed and take Portland out of it. You know, if you're doing that, do you want to do that halfway, or do you want to really blow it up and tank? Or are you going to try to make another move to get yourself back into the playoff picture? You know, it's kind of unclear. And these are the kinds of questions that management should have clear answers to. And I don't really hear a lot from Neil Olshey these days. You know, it's been a bad season. I mean, he lets these guys in the locker room take, you know, arrows and bullets night after night. You know, they're always facing the media. Poor Stotts is taking questions after every single loss, trying to explain away why the defense is so terrible. I mean, where's Olshey with his master plan and his vision? I just don't see it.
We were told plan A, plan B, plan C last summer. I'm like, are we on plan I or J? I can't remember which one it is. I'm told that they checked, Paul Allen checked with Terry Stotts prior to making this deal, just to be like, we know this is a step backwards. And that tells me Stotts is safe. Do you think Olshey's safe?
Well, I hope Stotts is safe, but it's, I don't think they're ever totally safe. When you're a longstanding coach who's been there for a number of years, and all of a sudden your defense drops in the bottom five, in the NBA, historically, that's a giant red flag. And especially if you're the first hire for your GM, and that puts you in a really tough spot, John. I mean, because you're the first guy to go. You're the first guy to get blamed. And I think that there should be, you know, a little smoke around Olshey's job, too, to be honest. I mean, he made a lot of calculated risks last summer. And so far, the track record of those calculated risks looks really bad. I mean, they basically all backfired. I understood his thought process. You know, there was definitely some justification behind what he was trying to do. I really did not like the Evan Turner move, obviously. And to me, that was like a real scramble backup plan that he probably should have resisted. But you know, now they're in a position where he made his bed. He has to kind of live in it. And if I'm Paul Allen, I'm asking him questions every single day about what's the plan here, because like I mentioned, like Damian Lillard's not as young as people think. And this guy's ready to win right now. He's not interested in, you know, taking a giant step back, you know, doing this, you know, tank down the stretch and try to get a top five pick. And he's ready to do it. And so, you know, I'm sure Paul Allen is trying to get those answers from Olshay. And to be honest, I think Blazers fans and the public deserve those answers too, especially after all the talk that we've heard for years. I mean, you mentioned plan A, plan B last summer, right? I mean, what about the needle mover when he first got the job? We're still waiting for that needle mover, aren't we?
Yeah. Ben Golliver, Sports Illustrated. You can listen to him on the Open Floor podcast. The moves of last summer, Festus Ezeli, I mean, it's been a bust, and people around here are so sick of knee injuries. And now, the pitch from Olshay after this deal is going to be, hey, one step back, two steps forward. This is what we're doing. You know, how much a fan base can take, I don't know. But what was the worst move in your estimation? Was Evan Turner? Was Alan Crabb? Was Festus? What part of that plan do you think was the weakest?
Yeah, to me it was the Turner move because their need was so clear. If you were going to overpay a player based on his ability, overpay a player at a position of need, you know. And Turner just did not play a position of need. He didn't bring a skill set that was necessarily complementary to the main guys. And the problem is when you're running out these weak defensive centers Plumlee or Leonard or everybody else in their front court, that makes your best players look bad. You know, Lillard and McCollum are being hung out to dry because, you know, clearly they're not plus defenders. Everybody would acknowledge that. They need to have guys, they need to be flanked by threes, fours, and fives who can really play some defense and cover up for their mistakes and let them do what they do best, which is, offense. And you look at the best teams around the league, they build around their stars' talents, right? I mean, Houston turned the whole thing over to James Harden. Oklahoma City, you know, build the entire team as they're kind of transitioning away from Kevin Durant in the mold of Russell Westbrook. And you just go right down the list, you know, Cleveland, how many shooters can they get for LeBron James because of his unbelievable passing, right? They build these teams around their star players' best skills, and that just didn't happen in Portland. Everybody knew what their guards' skills were and what their guards' weaknesses were, and instead of addressing that and kind of helping cover it up, they try to make do with these kind of short-term fixes. And by the way, Nurkic, I mean, to me, another one in the same category. You know, I mean, I don't see how he really helps Portland at all in terms of what he does. You know, he's kind of a black hole with the basketball, lots of turnovers. He wants to pound it one-on-one in the post. Nobody really plays that way anymore offensively. And every possession you give to him where you're risking turnovers and risking low-percentage shots one-on-one is a possession you're taking away from Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum. And then defensively, you got a lot of questions, too, about his versatility and how much is he really going to help you on that end as well. So, I mean, to me, if people are expecting Nurkic to be the answer just because he's a different guy than Plumlee, I mean, I would really caution against that. To me, they're just trying to bide a little time with that.
I had an Eastern Conference general manager tell me last night that, hey, picking 11th, 21st, and 27th in this draft is fine, but in any given draft, there are only 10 or 12 players that end up mattering anyway. Don't let people tell you how deep the draft is because it's only going to be 10 or 12 guys every year. How difficult is it to win with just the draft, given that the Blazers have had trouble in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, it's always better to be in a situation where you can be a destination for draft picks, free agents, and trade targets, right? I mean, if you're in a marquee market or you already have a superstar in the fold who can kind of help you, convince other people to come, that's a huge advantage. Having those draft picks is certainly better than not having them. I mean, you look at like Milwaukee, right? Their whole franchise right now actually has hope because they drafted Giannis in the middle of the first round. If they hadn't drafted Giannis, Jabari Parker goes down with his knee injury. I mean, their entire outlook is completely blown to smithereens, right? So you hit one home run there in the middle of the draft, that can be something that carries you through years and years of tough times, bad luck, and poor decisions. Now, Giannis is not Myers Leonard. You know, I mean, Myers Leonard was picked in basically the same position of the draft, and we've kind of seen how that's worked out. And so it all goes down to your eye for talent. You know, can you nail those picks? And then can one of those guys really rise up and become a true franchise player? And I think Portland's in position where, if they do kind of go the tank route, I mean, maybe not all out tanking, but they do try to slide back a little bit. You know, their own pick could get to be, pretty enticing this year, pretty quickly, because there's a lot of teams like all kind of clustered together down there in the draft lottery order. So that might be something for them to consider. to kind of do it, but not like shamelessly do it, but just tank a little bit to improve their odds. But you want to have those picks, but you can't bank on them solely as your turnaround, because look at some of the guys that Portland's taken in the lottery in the past that just haven't worked out.
Are they better off now than they were, let's say, when they were picking Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and, back in 2012 when they grabbed Lillard, Leonard, Barton, and Tyshawn Taylor in that draft, and everybody went, this could be it. This could be the turning point post-Brandon Roy. Are they better off today, or are they in a worse position?
You know, one thing I haven't heard a lot of lately, John, is people saying, oh, we don't need LaMarcus Aldridge. I think the Blazers could really use, that kind of talent in their front court. And you saw what a stabilizing type of piece that he is. I mean, you don't have these giant up and down swings of effectiveness when you've got a player like that. Now, he hasn't had his best season this year. His numbers are down a little bit. They manage his minutes in San Antonio. But losing Aldridge, that move in free agency, I mean, that decision – sets you back as a franchise. I mean, that's a lot of talent going out of the door, and I don't think they really did a great job of replacing it. So, I don't know. You can kind of spin it both ways with this group, right? Like, if you can get Lillard back up to playing his best basketball, I'm not sure he's done that yet this year, you can really make a strong case that C.J. McCollum is, a real breakout guy and a potential all-star snub even. There's stuff to like about this roster, but until they address the center spot, until they cover up some of the weaknesses, that talent is kind of rotting. And I think that's one of the causes for frustration here, is that the weakness is so clear. It's been clear now for years, and they just have not been able to address that spot. And until they do it, it's going to be frustrating. You're going to feel like, Blazers fans are going to feel like, something's wanting, something's missing, like the whole picture isn't there. Because, you look at some of these close games late, you can have any amazing column jumpers and Damian Lillard off the dribble drives as you want. If you're giving up points every single possession down the stretch, you're not going to win very many close games. And I think that's really been the case for Portland this season.
They are one game out of the eighth spot chasing Denver. They are two games out of being in the 14th spot. Which position are they closer to in your mind today?
I mean, they should still be the eighth team. I mean, they definitely have underperformed. I think when you look across those teams in that group, you'll take Damian and CJ over the core guys on those other teams, whether it's Cousins and whoever you want to consider Sacramento's second-best player. I mean, that roster is a real mess. You look at Denver, Jokic is really becoming a full-fledged star there. But everybody else in that roster is kind of a weird fit, and they could really blow things up if they want to here at the deadline. I mean, all the teams that kind of in that pack, probably don't have two players who are better than Damian and CJ. So they should be, rightfully, they should be that number 18, but there's no guarantee. I mean, they have proven they can't stop anybody. They haven't yet addressed that issue. And they've got, 10 days here before the trade deadline to do it. And if they don't do it, if they don't bring in a defensive-minded center, the kind of guy who was supposed to be what Festus Ezeli was going to do for them, then to me that's a sign that they don't even really care, that they're not that invested in the chase for the eighth seed. And, you can make an argument that they shouldn't be. I mean, what's the benefit of making the playoffs other than, kind of patting yourself on the back and saying you did it? I mean, the win total is going to be very low. It's one of the weakest eighth seeds we've seen in recent memory in either conference, let alone the West. And Golden State, I mean, that's going to be four games and done very quickly. So, I've started to see some people say, hey, this should be tank time for the Blazers. And if you can sell that to the players, and that's always going to be tough, especially guys, like I said, who are in their prime, I think they should consider doing that.
Ben Golliver, you're the best. Sports Illustrated Open Floor Podcast. Thank you, Ben.
All right, John. Take care, man.
There he is. That's good stuff. Tell me what you think. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Where do the Blazers finish in the Western Conference, 1 through 16, I don't know. I'm looking at the standings and I'm going, will they finish in front of Denver? Well, Denver's clearly trying to get better for this season. I don't see that happening. Sacramento's a half a game behind them. There's Dallas, who's been playing very well in the last 10 or 12 games. New Orleans after that, then Minnesota. Do they finish in front of the Lakers? You tell me, tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. We'll tell you about an arrest, a baby on the way, and a problem at Starbucks. All that's next.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
It's gorgeous outside. We can see there's no rain, there's no snow, right? Kiki, is still nice out there? Well, she says it is. So, I'm excited about that because... And this is in no way, shape, or form am I telling you that you need to sign up for the BFT's Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament this summer, because I don't think there's going to be any opportunities to do that. I think it's already sold out. But I'm excited about playing out there, and I'm excited about the Reserve Golf Course. That's where we play the thing. We've got choices. So the area's golf courses have been fighting over hosting this tournament for years, and the Reserve's got it, and... We're happy to have it out there. Reserve's got the north side and the south side and great restaurant and the vineyards, and the staff are phenomenal. That was the thing last year, because at the tournament, the staff at the Reserve was literally like running around crazy making it happen. And I appreciate them. And on a day like today, I seriously was driving in today and I was like, if I didn't have to do the radio show, which I love to do, if I didn't have to do it, today would be a day where I'd be like calling the Reserve and being like, can I get a tee time? Is the course, how shape is the course in, and which side do I want to play? And so yes, reservegolf.com to check that out. And as the spring comes, and a day like today makes me think about the spring, as the spring comes, start thinking about the Reserve Golf Course and get yourself out there. You'll know what I'm talking about once you've been out there. And if you've played the Reserve, you know what I'm talking about. All the U.S. Open winners and the major winners who have played that course over the years. Absolutely phenomenal. And it's why we hold the BFT Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament there. Ben Gulliver was great earlier. Grab a podcast of that if you are somebody who wants to know what the hell's going on at One Center Court with the Blazers. I kind of want to know what the hell's going on with Jerry Sandusky's family. Like, Sandusky, we know, is a creep pedophile in prison and throw away the key. But a story coming out today in Pennsylvania, Jeffrey Sandusky, the adult son of the convicted child molester Jerry Sandusky, was arrested by Pennsylvania State Police today. He now faces child sex charges himself. This coming from a report out of Philadelphia that he faces charges of criminal solicitation of statutory sex assault, criminal solicitation of involuntary deviant sexual intercourse on a person under the age of 16, two counts of criminal solicitation of photographs, communicating with a minor, sex abuse. All these are felonies. He was arraigned. He was jailed. His defense attorney declined to comment on the allegations. Everybody else went, of course, because he's a Sandusky. This is what Sandusky's do. But apparently he's one of six adopted children of Jerry Sandusky, who, by the way, was convicted on 45 counts of sex abuse in 2012. He's now about 72 years old, and he'll get out when he's about 132. Sandusky will. He maintains his innocence, by the way. If Jerry molested this son, it's terrible. But my sympathy would end the moment that this son chose to molest an innocent child. I think that this is very disappointing. I think that we often get focused on the pedophile and not the survivor of crimes like this. So while I'm sitting here slapping my forehead going, really? This is like, you couldn't make this up. That's how ridiculous and absurd it is. I'm also thinking about I hope that this was limited in its scope and it wasn't like the work dad was doing with 45 counts. very disappointed with what we're hearing there. And there's an uncomfortable corner of hell that should be reserved for people like Jerry Sandusky and possibly his adopted son. That's one story that caught my eye just now. Oregon State has announced a fan experience committee. I don't know if you saw this, but everybody's into like customer service, as they should be. And the winners who win and draw crowds often will get their eye off the ball when it comes to fan experience, because, well, I'm just going to use the Oregon Ducks as an example. In football, the Oregon Ducks at Autzen Stadium, I think they got a little fat and happy with, hey, the football's so good, we can treat the consumer like crap, raise the prices, give them a crummy parking pass, and they should be happy in that gravel parking lot. And I think at the end of it, when they stopped winning as much, a lot of the Duck fans just kind of went, you know what? My experience hasn't been great. The kickoffs suck. Game times suck. And, yeah, I got better ways that I could spend my money as they begin to raise prices. And I think, ultimately, that's one of the things that's hurting Oregon as they try to, sell tickets. So, but Oregon State is doing something that Athletic Director Scott Barnes, who, by the way, it's his first day on the job today, and he has come out and he's created a fan experience committee. So what he's going to do is, he did this at Utah State and he did it at Pitt, but what he's going to do is he's going to pick 20 volunteer members that serve 1 to 2 year terms. This is like the Supreme Court, and meet quarterly to discuss the fan experience. They could be donors, they could be season ticket holders, they could be single game purchasers, they could be students, they could be alumni, they could be community members, it could be you. You could apply online at osubeavers.com, and the online application says that candidates will receive responses by February 28th. I got a great idea. Kiki, you need to be on this committee.
I would love it. Let's do it.
Supreme Court Justice.
I love it.
This would be like you.
That's
you,
perfect.
You get a voice here. You go to Beavers games. You go to Duck games. You're perfect for this. You go to Wrigley.
You know what? I was thinking about it. I was looking at reading some of the columns over the Oregon State win this weekend over UCLA. And I know, you know, March Madness is coming along. I'd like to be embedded with the team as they.
Yeah, they're not going to let you do that.
I know, but I'm just saying. Don't you think that would be fun?
You could cover the team on behalf of 750 The Game, 102.9 FM. But they also lost by 20 to USC.
I know. That was just a little
college kids.
That was just a little blip on the radar.
Get some focus.
They play Stanford,
Lady,
I believe.
Lady Beavers.
Stanford Friday, big game.
Just like the men at Oregon, and the women at Oregon State both did the same damn thing. Like the men at Oregon lost to Colorado, and then beat UCLA. I got a band. I got my stitches out. They had to put a hospital band on me. Don't worry about it. So I still have it on my wrist. Forgot to take it off.
I was just going to say, do you need to tell me something? He's got a medical bracelet
on. I got away.
It's like,
and I'm in a gown doing this show. It's weird because they told me to come back to the ER, and they said, we'll take your stitches out, but then they have to admit you, I guess, to take your stitches out. So I got stitches on my hand. Not a big deal.
How is it feeling, though?
I'm because, a tough guy.
Because you unwrapped it, I think, prematurely last week, because you unwrapped it.
It was really
then,
good. Look at it. It feels really
And then you
really
rewrapped
good.
It the next day. Yeah, can you bend it?
Yeah, I could bend it. The stitches are out. It's
well,
just
it looks
good.
Like the stitch is right on
new.
Your knuckle.
It's good as new.
Oh, stop.
It's good as new.
I don't
See
like
that?
It. I don't like it. I don't trust
good
it.
Good as new. People, the guy who was taking the stitches out, big listener of the show, he was like, hey, how'd you do that?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to give him the whole story about how I ran into a wall. And
he must be busy during the day. He doesn't listen to the
Gliss
show.
Gliss saved my life.
He did. Gliss had a big week that week.
Gliss had
the show.
He had a good
week. And then
week.
He had to save you.
This week he's done nothing. It's already Monday.
Liar.
It's already done Monday.
No,
he's
he
done,
just did some
done almost
big
nothing.
Work for me.
Back to what people care about. So you got the fan experience committee. You could be on it.
I love it.
Anyone else could be on it at osubeavers.com. And if you get on it, I want to hear from you on this fan experience thing. Because I think the things that you can control, if you're a fan or you're like, hey, they don't have enough bathrooms. Hey, the prices are this. And hey, you know, what about beer sales here and there? And I don't like to be nickel and dimed. And your parking lot stinks. And, you know, if I come in, like if the fan experience at Autzen, I think would be so much more fun. Because that parking lot at Autzen is a real problem. And people who pay premium prices to park out in the middle of gravel and stand there in the rain and mud and pretend like they're having a great time when it's like you have this million, $90 million football facility. Could you pave the damn parking lot? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it could just be with normal pave stuff. It doesn't have to be Brazilian concrete. It doesn't have to have, like, fluorescent lines painted on it. Just pave the damn lot so that people who are paying $45 to park can park and feel good about it. Like, give people value for it. So if I were on the committee at Oregon, I'd say stuff like that. Or I'd say, like, the whole exodus of people leaving the stadium to go have to drink at Oregon. Like, are we under the illusion that college football and alcohol, like, you could, like, if you pay enough money at Oregon, you're a donor, you can order alcohol, like, on the club level, you can get an alcoholic beverage, but in the regular stadium, you can't have that access. You got to go to the parking lot, like, you're, mm-hmm. Like you're some degenerate drinker who's like, I need to go get a drink in the parking lot. I'm going to run out there and drink and then come back into the stadium. And they literally blow a horn to be like,
it's like last call.
Back on the job.
Well, a lot of people also go to the Mashovsky Center.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I've just heard.
So
rumors.
What? So is the, so you can have the illusion that they're not selling alcohol in the stadium? Like,
yeah.
Give me a break. There's so much branding around alcohol. I'll never forget. I was covering a college basketball program one time, and they had a beer can as a sponsor. It was Coors Light or it was some kind of brewery. Like here in the state of Oregon, I'd use Bridgeport Brewing as like the thing. All right, so we have the, like the Bridgeport Brewing beer bottle, and the players would run out of the locker room through the beer can or the beer bottle or whatever it was onto the court. That's how they entered the court. It was like they were being poured out of the beer bottle onto the court. And then the school said, we don't sell alcoholic beverages inside the arena. And I was like, you're kidding yourself if you think you're not selling alcoholic beverages inside the arena. And by the way, what about the idea that, like, that a person could drink responsibly at a sporting event? Like, I think that, you know, they lose the idea that, hey, there's some responsible people out there, like, I'm talking about the vast majority of human beings, that could handle having a beer at a game, and yet they'll sell signage, they'll sell other things, they'll sell broadcast rights, but they won't. They'll draw the line at, look, we'll serve the people on the club level because they know how to drink, but if you are one of the blue-collar people who has a regular seat in the stadium, you're going to have to slum it in the parking lot doing a keg stand or whatever it is. So, yes, Fan Experience Committee, I'd like to be on it. I'm probably not qualified, but Kiki could get on it.
I love it. I love the idea.
Meanwhile, another story that caught my eye, Latrell Sprewell shows up at Madison Square Garden as a personal guest of James Dolan.
That,
anybody else kind of go,
next,
huh?
I saw that this morning and I was like, are you kidding? How could you? That guy is just circling the drain.
It's a Dolan PR ploy. I mean, here's a pattern here, right? So he brings back Sprewell. And by the way, Sprewell's lifetime ban magically lifted in order so he could come back. Now Charles Oakley's the only one not allowed there. And Dolan sits him almost next to him during the game against San Antonio. By the way, Carmelo Anthony was fantastic in that game. Won the damn thing by himself. So you got Spree hanging around open arms with Dolan. If you're Spree, do you take that freebie?
No. But that just shows me how desperate he is just for some sort of, you know. The last time I saw Latrell Sprewell was in that weird TV commercial where the dad's sitting there with his kid.
Yeah.
And he's essentially saying, don't be this guy.
Do you think that Dolan was saying, I have black friends? Is that, Gliss, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, the whole thing is really bizarre to me. And apparently Vin Baker has come out and said that he got an invitation to come sit with James Dolan as well. So it's a really bizarre thing for him to be doing to try to make himself look better with this whole Oakley thing.
I have black friends. Look at me. Spree choked a guy. And he's my buddy now.
Ridiculous.
Bad optics on that one. So Dolan, make a new low there. And then meanwhile, I see another story because I love the Starbucks app. I love Starbucks. It's easy. I like it. Frankly, it's one of the only companies that could treat me like crap and I'd get right back in line. I just would. Like, one day I went to the Starbucks, and I waited in line for about 8 people in front of me. I got up to the line, and I was like, I can have my iced coffee, and they said the brewer's broken. Sorry, we don't have iced coffee. All we can do right now is this, this, and this. And I said, well, I'll come back because I'm thinking they're going to fix this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I come back upstairs here. I wait like an hour, and then I start to shake, and I'm like, I need to go down and get that coffee. So I go back down, and there's a leather line, and I waited all the way through it. And in line, I literally got on my app with my brokerage firm, and I bought Starbucks stock while I was in line.
Yeah, you realized.
I didn't care the price. I just said market price, buy today. Because I realized. Treat me like garbage. I get right back in line.
Mm-hmm.
And I got right back in line. They still didn't have the coffee, and I was happy. I'll come back tomorrow. Thank you.
Really?
It's like an abusive relationship.
It is, yeah. I was just going to say, they didn't call you back.
I'm like, baby, take me back.
Nope.
You know? Nope. I know you're sorry.
Nope.
I know you're sorry.
Yeah.
Is there any company that could treat you like garbage, but their product is so good that you go, I'm sorry, I'm going to be back?
Well, I imagine on some level, the Cubs, simply because they're doing so much, to Wrigley Field, and they're blowing out a lot of, you know, the land around and doing all this new fancy stuff, which is counterintuitive to what Wrigley Field stands
for me.
Yeah. And I know they've raised prices quite a bit to some of the season ticket holders.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Now wait till they start all the merchandising and everything comes back.
So, but I'm, you know, I'll continue to come back, I guess. So that's really the one for me.
Mine is Starbucks. Glitch, do you have a company that could just treat you like trash and get right back in line?
I mean, not specifically. Starbucks, I'd probably...
I know one. You're just not thinking of it.
Oh, who's that?
The Blazers.
Well...
They treat you like garbage.
That's true.
They abuse you mentally and physically. They steal from you. They take money from you. And you get back in line. You show up at the games and you go, oh, they got draft picks.
Well, it's hard to let your teams go, you know? The Giants and the Blazers, yeah, I'd probably put them up there, but... Knowing what I know now about dealing with the Blazers behind the scenes, I'm a little less of a fan. It doesn't take away the fact that I still love the team, but changes my opinion a little
bit.
Give
it some time. Yeah.
So we talked about the Golden State OKC game on Friday and whether or not we'd watch. And I said I wasn't going to watch. And I have a confession to make. I did watch most of the game.
You lied.
I did. I didn't mean to. It was unintended.
How did that happen?
Did you watch?
You were drunk and you were too far from the remote.
I just decided, I was like, oh, this is actually more intriguing than I thought it would be. The game went pretty much what I thought. I mean, it was close for like 7 minutes.
Who did you root for? I'm curious.
Oh, OKC. Absolutely.
Rooted for the little guy.
But what I thought was interesting was the national broadcasters, and they said it, I don't know how many times, and I thought it was ridiculous every time they said it. But they're like, well, you know, I think it'll be great. At some point, these fans are going to give Kevin Durant a standing ovation. And I was like, I don't know what water you're drinking, what you're smoking, but I just cannot fathom a scenario where that would happen. The way that I look at that, this is a guy who was up. He and Westbrook, they were up 3-1. They completely flatlined. They lost their opportunity. So if you are a true competitor, in my mind, you get back in line and you go at him again. And he took the easy way out. And I just don't understand why these national people are so hell-bent on getting these guys to be friends again. I think it's ridiculous.
Just let them be enemies. Did you hear what happened after the game?
No.
So after the game, so Golden State wins 130-114. And after the game, Kevin Durant, as players do in Oklahoma City, wanted to go to a restaurant called Mahogany Prime Steakhouse. So contacted the owner, this guy Dame Osborne, and Osborne said it would be like 30 or 35 grand to rent out the whole restaurant. But he had decided that it would be a bad idea to rent it out to Durant, bad optics, plus he's got Thunder players. I guess this is like the place the players go after the game. All right? It's like Brick's Tavern over except in Oklahoma City.
Gotcha.
So, Pete, you have Durant wanting to rent the place out, the owner saying, no, we've got Thunder players who come in here. You're welcome to come into the restaurant, but we're not going to give you the run of the place. So Durant goes to dinner there. He sits down in the restaurant, and like 5 minutes later, Russell Westbrook shows up.
Love it.
They're seated 15 feet from each other and are eating without really having, you know, a discussion. Like, they're breaking bread without breaking bread.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
awkward.
And the owner, though, gives Westbrook a room.
Mm-hmm.
and says that's his room. Mm-hmm. He can have his people in there in his room. Westbrook had 47 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists.
Yeah, but he had like 10 or 11 turnovers,
11
too.
Turnovers.
Yeah.
Durant had 34 and 9. Who had the better game?
Well, I still think Westbrook. I think those turnovers where he was just forcing it. I mean, he does that. Yeah. That's who he is. But I
like
think
Brett
he's far
Favre.
More inter- yeah, he's far yeah. more entertaining. And I like that. I can't remember. Was it the third quarter when he, you know, it was like their timeout or something. And he was like, I'm coming for you. And they were jawing a bit.
Bring it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sports. At the end of it, it's still sports. I don't get the idea that you guys want to kill each other. But
they're competitors.
Here's the thing that bothers me about this game. It's we wait all year for a moment like this where we go, oh, that's a pride game. And somebody said it to me over the weekend. Oh, it's a pride game.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we get more of that in the NBA? Because I look at 82-game schedule. Where's the Blazers pride game? Does it exist? Where's Cleveland's pride game? Where's Milwaukee's pride game? By the way, shouldn't every night kind of be a pride game for the NBA players? And yet, we finally get a night where we're like, these two teams, these two players, star players, don't really love each other, and they're going to really compete tonight. And in that, it was like the playoffs, and like it's why you watched mm-hmm. it, because it was compelling.
That's exactly right.
It's going to get great numbers. I hadn't seen the overnight numbers. It's going to get great numbers, but it bothers me because it's exactly what's wrong with the NBA. There's not enough pride games. Mm-hmm. There's not enough pride in general in the league. We'll talk about it in Punch It Audio coming up. Kiki's going to read the news later in the show. You tell me. Did you watch the game and who did you root for? 417-7575.
I'm Ernest Ernie, and you listen to John Cusano. He's a great guy. Wonderful, colossal, the spinner for your story. Get my operation.
Rest in peace, Ernest Ernie. I know his friends and family, they hear that on the show and they love it. See, what I'm saying is the customer, that's you, the listener, you're important to me. That's why I try to put you in good position to know things and to see through the crap that's out there. There is a lot of crap out there. Blazers make a move. Mason Plumlee goes to Denver. Mason Plumlee, love you, but you had to go. Yusuf Nurkic, welcome to Portland. Hope you like food trucks and you have good knees. In the meantime, though, the Blazers get a first-round pick via Memphis. That gives them three first-rounders, their own pick, which would be 11 today if the draft was today, Cleveland's pick, which would be 27 to 30 range, and Memphis's pick from Denver would be the number 21 pick today. So that gives the Blazers three opportunities, three teenagers out there that could save this franchise. Yeah, do you believe in it? Was it the right move? Is Neil Olshey the right guy to make the picks? All of that top of mind and stuff that we need to talk about. But before that, we will get to the best sound in sports. It's a segment we call Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Well, we talked about Durant and Westbrook. Kevin Durant said, hey, it's part of the game. Booing, the hate, punch it.
We should have just kept playing. I don't even think they should have reviewed anything. It's a part of it. Hard fouls, you know, talking. All that stuff's a part of the game. That's what makes the game fun for us.
Game's fun, he says, because of all that stuff. No, here's what's part of the game. And Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, thank you, first of all, for giving us a pride game and giving us a game in the NBA that in the regular season that matters. Because the bottom line is, I think the NBA looked great in that you had two teams and fans that cared about these teams and players on these teams that really cared. And everybody played hard. And we don't get enough of that. And that's what pisses me off about the NBA. Because most of the time they're going through the motions. And two teams call timeout. You get a 20-second timeout. You got two star players jawing at each other as they're going to the benches. I loved it. And it made me care about the game. Russell Westbrook. He says he and Kevin Durant, yeah, they went separate ways. Leave it going separate ways. Punch it.
Do you think it's silly that so many people care about you and KD and what y'all think?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think it's... doesn't make any sense. It's over with. He plays for his team. I live with my team. Let him do his thing. I do my thing. And That's it. Plain and simple.
Look, here's the deal. Doesn't Steve Kerr have to play Russell Westbrook in the All-Star game? I mean, that's still ahead of us. We're going to get an All-Star
that's
game.
That's must-see TV right
there. It
matters. That's fantastic.
I don't need these guys to get along. And Kiki, you hit it on the head. Like, everybody else wants everybody to get along. I don't need it. I love that we had a game that matters. I love that we had two teams that matters. More of that, please. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, saying goodbye to Mason Plumlee. McCollum said they're losing glue. Punch it.
Well, he's our starting center. Starting center does a lot for us. He handles the ball, a lot of responsibilities, playmaking. And he's just a glue guy that you want on your team. He's a guy who does things the right way, never complains.
That's a nebulous term. And what it means is this is a guy who holds the team together, helps the team function as a single unit rather than five individuals. Also, though, what it means is Mason Plumlee probably wasn't that good because they never called an all-star a glue guy. You know, I think it's kind of, would you want to be a glue guy? Or do you want to be, you know, I'm a tent pole for this franchise?
I don't know. I don't have anything wrong with glue. I like glue. You need glue.
They're
you
important.
Glues are role players.
What's the all-time epitome of glue guy by NBA standards? I throw up Shane Battier. Glue guy. Gliss, you got a glue guy? Is there a glue guy?
I don't know.
What's the guy
All
who...
Right, I'm going to throw out a name and you tell me, is it a glue guy or not?
Okay.
Battier.
Yes.
We agree Battier is a good glue guy.
I'll give you glue.
Let's say Myers Leonard, glue guy or no?
No.
Why not?
Because he shoots like 2 for 6 from 3-point range and doesn't do anything else.
Not enough glue in that game.
Who's the guy who played for the Lakers? He could always hit the three.
Robert Horry.
That guy.
How about Tim Duncan? Is he a quintessential glue guy or is he too good to be a glue guy?
I think
guy?
He's too good to be a glue guy.
Is Draymond Green a glue guy?
Yes. Glue.
I don't know, because, well, I guess he qualifies, but...
Like Iguodala.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's the bigger glue guy? Iggy or Draymond?
Iggy.
Even Sean Livingston.
You think he's a glue guy?
I do, yeah.
Do you think Derek Fisher was a glue guy?
Yes, that's a good one.
Is that a good point?
Uh-huh. Like, I'm trying to think of like the old Detroit Pistons.
Tayshaun Prince, was he a glue guy? Or was he just a really good defender who was part of a team?
I don't know that he was glue.
I think he's a glue guy.
Really?
Was Gerald Henderson a glue guy?
No.
No? You don't like him as a glue guy?
I know the team was a lot better with him.
If he was glue, then the glue didn't stick. It's non-sticky glue.
How about is Kevin Love a glue guy or is he too good?
I think he's too good.
He's too good.
Yeah.
So to be a glue guy...
Yeah, it's tricky to be a glue guy because you don't want to be, because if you're not a glue guy, then basically you're riding the pine.
Is Matt Barnes a glue guy?
I'd buy that. Yeah.
I think he's a bad attitude though. I don't think you can have a neck tat and be a glue guy.
that disqualifies you?
Yeah.
Okay.
How about Mike Conley with the Grizzlies? Mm.
He's too good.
He's a good teammate though.
He has the personality of a glue guy, but he is too important to the to the team.
Is Nicholas Batum a glue guy?
Yes.
Good job, Gliss.
Is Chandler Parsons a glue guy?
Yes.
I don't know about that. He's not very
anymore.
Good right now.
Is Kawhi Leonard a glue guy?
No, he's too good.
I think all the Spurs
he's
have some
good.
Glue in them, though. That's why they're Spurs.
Yeah, I think.
Okay, here's one. Serge Ibaka. Glue guy?
Well...
I think when he had Durant
and Westbrook.
I think
he was at OKC. Yeah, yeah, not anymore.
He was.
Last year.
Do we have a glue guy on the show? Everybody looking around at each other. I wish people could have saw you three looking at each other. Kind of all raising your
Gliss
hands.
This is our glue guy. Everyone here. I mean.
Because here's the problem. Like,
Kellen? Dustin?
I think Dustin might be the ultimate glue guy. I think that USA Basketball... told us the importance of a glue guy because remember in Athens in 2004, they couldn't beat Puerto Rico. They had all-stars and they couldn't beat Puerto Rico. And it's what caused USA Basketball to go out and go, we need Shane Battier's and Tayshaun Prince's on this team in addition to the LeBrons. And it's why they've gone out and they've looked at, hey, we can't just put together an AAU basketball team. And we need some guys on this team that are going to do dirty work, that are going to be good teammates, that are going to be... you know, doing other things, hold the team together, keep the team focused, especially when it's rough. do all those little things to take the charges, dive for loose balls, hit free throws. He's a pest on defense.
Wesley Matthews.
Glue guy.
Glue.
Yes. Guy's not going to worry about how many points he has or how much he plays.
Joel Prisbilla.
Glue guy.
Oh,
he
yes.
was a glue guy.
Good.
Which,
call.
By the way, he's also the Blazer to start the most games in the last 10 years at center.
I think every winner has a glue guy mm-hmm. somewhere on that roster. There's sometimes multiple glue guys. Glue guys.
We got to get like a sounder for that.
The Blazers need a glue guy. They need a couple of glue guys. The problem the Blazers is they have a no-name team. Faceless. Like, if you ask somebody who doesn't follow the Blazers, like, but is still an NBA fan, tell me the top eight guys in Portland's rotation, they will not know the names of the Blazers players. I'm just saying. All right, moving along. Scott Ruick, Oregon State women's basketball coach. Bad loss to UCLA, lost by 20. They come back and get a big win over UCLA after losing to USC by 20. Ruick talked about the win.
Obviously, a great bounce-back win for us today over a really, really good team. And I'm obviously hopeful Jordan's okay. You don't want to see that, and certainly we don't want to play them without her on the team and on the floor.
That Jordan Canada, who was injured for UCLA, the Beavers get a big win. They had a tough loss, though, entering this. They lose by 20 in a very uncharacteristic loss to a USC team that people didn't see coming. You know, you can chalk that up as, yes, they look beyond them. Yes, they were emotionally flat in preparation for a much bigger game. Scott Ruick spun it into, yeah, it's part of the journey. It's part of the narrative of this season, which is a smart thing to do because you don't want to go sky is falling. But it's the same thing that Dana Altman had to do when his team had big wins over Utah and Arizona and had a UCLA game coming on the horizon. They lose to Colorado amid that. I think, and I even think the UCLA loss for the Ducks was a good loss because it gave them a competitive game. It gave them a benchmark of where they are. It was a road loss. They were right in it to the end. I just didn't like the Oregon State women's loss as much because it's a blowout. I didn't like the way they lost, but I think the timing, 4 or 5 games left in the regular season, conference tournament after that, it's not a bad time to have a loss if you're a college basketball team. You never want one. Dana Altman talked about getting the job done against USC. Punch it.
Well, we did. After, you know, not finishing that game the other night and not doing the tough things, getting out rebounded and no points off turnovers in second half, Jerry. I don't know if we even talked about that. You know, we had no points off turnovers second half. So, again, we've got to turn it into a defensive game. That's much, much better for us.
Ducks are 22-4. They're still fighting in conference play to see if they can win the regular season conference championship with UCLA and Arizona right there. I didn't love this game. They were only up 2 at half. They pulled away in the second half. They end up winning by 11. USC's not bad, which is the bright side of this. But again, I like that Oregon's playing in some close games and finding an opportunity to win some close games down the stretch. They didn't get that last year. And look, the conference tournament is going to be fascinating in Vegas. Because you're going to have a very good UCLA team, a very good Arizona team, and a very good Oregon team. 3 teams that you can make an argument all deserve to be in the top 15 in college basketball. But ultimately, if you are somebody who's looking at, you know, that conference tournament, championship tournament, it's going to be phenomenal to watch those teams play off. Jordan Spieth. He was at Pebble Beach for the Bing Crosby Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Punch it.
Jordan Spieth takes the putter back. The ball is into the cup. Jordan Spieth is the winner of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I'd say that Jordan made all the right calls at the AT&T.
He's 23 years old, and it's hard to believe that, you know, he kind of burst onto the scene, the world number one, 2-time major winner. And then everybody kind of expected that he was going to dominate after getting his major wins. But, you know, here he is picking up his first victory of the year at the Pebble Beach, 19 under, just the second man along with Tiger to win 9 times on the tour before the age of 24. That ain't bad. I don't know what you did before age 24. Jordan Spieth's got 9 PGA wins. And golf needs stars. That's, I mean, the bottom line, all sports need stars. It's marketing. Golf needs guys like Jordan Spieth to win. And not just to win like a Masters and U.S. Open back-to-back 2 years ago. But after that, you're going to need a little bit more than, you know, the Tournament of Champions and the DeLuca Invitational to put on your resume if you're this guy. Ben Golliver was on earlier in the show, and he talked about the direction of the Blazers franchise post-trade. Punch it.
You know, they take a step back. I mean, this is the kind of move that could potentially put Denver into that number eight seed and take Portland out of it. You know, if you're doing that, do you want to do that halfway, or do you want to really blow it up and tank? Or are you going to try to make another move to get yourself back into the playoff picture? You know, it's kind of unclear. And these are the kinds of questions that management should have clear answers to.
Yeah, these are the kinds of questions they should have answers to, but they don't. They don't. They make this trade. They're selling to the public, one step back, two steps forward. We've heard it. We've been there. We've done that. Just go win games and throw a parade. That's what people in Portland want to hear. Also, Myers Leonard, checking in about the new guy, Yusuf Nurkic. Who is he? 8 points, 6 rebounds a game, averaging 17 minutes for the Denver Nuggets. Myers Leonard gives a scouting report. Punch it.
I know he's strong. You know, obviously, I've played against him, I don't know, a few times now. Strong in the paint, post player, left hand, right hand, pretty decent touch from what I've seen in the mid-range. Good offensive rebounder, but, you know, we'll see. When he gets here, you know, I'm the type of guy, I'm going to go straight to him and, you know, try to figure him out and see what kind of guy he is.
I don't hear from Myers Leonard that he's viewing Yusuf Nurkic as a glue guy. He's seeing him as a threat on his own. You know, sort of, hey, this was supposed to be my time when Plumlee left.
Yeah, I like that. I like that attitude. You don't want to, you know, he's in his waters. He doesn't want to open him with, you know, welcome him with open arms.
Is it too early to talk soccer on the show?
No.
Because the Timbers played to a 2-2 draw in their, do we call it the preseason? In their preseason game. Punch it.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is the first time that this front four is played together. Blanco to Powell. Powell across. Oh, Adi! Shiki! We're level.
Caleb Porter didn't play his starters in the opening half. Played him in the second half. They get a 2-2 draw with Minnesota United. The Timbers were down 2-0. Then won the second half 2-0. And, you know, it was a tough year for them in that, you know, they didn't get the results that they wanted this last year, and then Seattle did. Like, I think that if there was any one franchise that Timbers fans wouldn't have wanted to see win, it would have been Seattle. But I also think, like, you get a wide berth when you throw a championship parade. And I said it last night on KGW Sports Sunday. We were on last night at 11:30, and I said, look, this, the bottom line is they won a championship and threw a parade. So when they come back for this last season, while it may have annoyed some people that they couldn't win on the road, and it may have annoyed some people that they fell short and had a disappointing season, I kind of trust what Merritt Paulson and Caleb Porter are doing. I trust them because they have proven. They have proof of performance. See, you know, and I say there's only two things you sell in sports. It's, hey, we won championships. We know what we're doing. Or it's, rise with us. We're building something. It's proof of performance or it's hope that you're selling. And the Blazers are going to sell you hope with, hey, we have 3 first-round draft picks and, you know, we've got 2 players at the age of 26 and 27 that we think we can build around. But if you are the Timbers fans, you know, you kind of have a brain trust in Gavin Wilkinson and Caleb Porter and Merritt Paulson, the owner, who has said, hey, we know what we're doing here. We just proved it. We just won the damn thing and we had a parade. And when those three guys came in here in studio, Gavin had like a flask in his pocket. Like, I gave him, like, you can, like, if Bill Walton showed up with a flask, you'd be like, Bill, whoa, what are you doing? But they won a championship and they were on a parade.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your flask. Bring it in studio.
Rihanna had a bedazzled flask last night that they kept showing her taking a little nip from at the Grammy Awards. It was pretty
Did you
funny.
Like the Grammys?
It was fantastic. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. I thought it was a good show. It was a good show because it's live TV and
did
not
Adele,
everything.
Did Adele stink?
No. No.
Some people think she stunk.
No, these people are wrong.
No?
Nope.
She brought the heat?
She brought the heat.
It was a good performance? How about
she
how
actually
about Beyonce? Was Beyonce in rare form or no?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, that's the thing. That's the difference between those two artists, which I think are so interesting because they're so talented And, you know, I just think Beyonce has just so many more people and an entourage and costumes and changing and choreography and you know, she's got graphics that are pre-produced that she has to make sure that she's timed with. Very similar to the Grammy Award performance that she had several years ago when she dropped the mic and rubbed her belly, which was basically her way of announcing that she was pregnant with Blue. So she has a lot of pre-production in her stuff.
Did the Pentatonix, were they in an impossible position in that you'd had Bruno Mars, you'd had all this stuff, and then suddenly it's just a cappella?
Yeah, that was
it was underwhelming.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Kellen, what'd you think? I mean, obviously I know the Metallica, there were some issues with the audio there, but then again, you know, that's what makes TV so interesting, and you get to see these performers kind of under pressure. I saw the guy at the end, I think he threw his guitar and he kicked the mic. Did you see that, Kellen?
There's several good reasons for that. First, Megadeth won their first Grammy, which was awesome, but when they came out, they played Metallica's music over Megadeth's entrance.
Oof.
That's huge because Megadeth's a band because they kicked the guy out of Metallica. So there's a huge rivalry there going 30 years back.
Adele stopping and starting over?
You're stealing my thunder, dude. Oh. We talk about that. Everybody knows. We could debate this. I think it's a great thing.
All right,
if it's not going right.
All right, we're going to talk about this coming up. Okay. We're going to talk about Adele stopping and starting over. The Blazers did that with your mind in the middle of the first quarter. Hey, we're not doing this right.
Hey, well, what?
We screwed this up.
Well, we're starting over. If you're Adele, based on what happened to her last year, though, right. I think she was within her right.
We're going to kick this around. All this is in front of us, plus more in the latest on what the Blazers are winding up to do. Where is this thing going? We'll talk about it.
Someone should all listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay, here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
Gresham Ford. That's the Ford dealership with a heart. That's Bess Wills and the team out at Gresham Ford. Hey, if you're looking for a vehicle, I'll just tell you this. Whether you're looking for a new vehicle or a used vehicle, start the search at Gresham Ford. And especially if you like Ford's vehicles, which we do. We drive a Ford Explorer. Start that search at Gresham Ford. They're at 1999 East Powell Boulevard in Gresham. And online at GreshamFord.com. And look, I know Bess. I know her personally. I know Preston. I know her husband, Bob. They're great people. And I know a lot of the car dealerships, how do I put this? There are a lot of places you'd go where you'd buy one car and you'd go, I'm never going back there again. At Gresham Ford, the best thing that I can say about Bess and her team is that we not only bought multiple vehicles there, but we sent our friends and family there, including my sister, my sister's friends. It's, you know, hey, it's my reputation, right, when I'm sending somebody somewhere. So Gresham Ford, they're online at GreshamFord.com, but find them at East Powell Boulevard in Gresham and tell them the BFT sent you when you start that search. And they've got the quick lane on site there where they service any make or model of vehicle. It's where we service our cars. It's where we buy our cars. Gresham Ford does it right. I'm going to tell you what doesn't do it right. And I'm always really hesitant to bring my problems on air because I feel like some people listen to this show because their job sucks and they want to come to the show and think about something else. Some people listen to the show because they want to be informed. Some people listen to the show because they just get beat up emotionally all day. And they're like, I need a diversion from life and taxes and death and bills and all the real life stuff. But I'm having a problem here that I think everybody on this show is well aware of.
Mm-hmm. Confirmed.
I bought a locker many, many months ago and it was when they took my desk away here. I walk in one day and they're giving my desk to somebody. And I'm like, really? But that's cool. I just need somewhere to hang my stuff. So I went out of my way and bought my own locker.
Yes. Okay?
I had it setup in here. I had to assemble the damn thing, but it's a nice looking locker.
It's a locker. It's got a little bar there. It's got some hooks. You know, if you want to, you know, put your coat on there, you got a hanger. And then above the bar is basically, it's cut in half. You have a little slot, an area where you can put stuff in. And then to the left, this is where the problem arises.
Chamber of hell is what I call it.
I'm going to toss it to you now.
It's got an actual locker with a combination lock up there.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first time that I closed that thing was the only time I've been inside of it, because I closed it. It hasn't opened since. Okay.
Yep. I can confirm that.
I have reached out to the company and they said, did you get the key? And I said, there's no key. I got no key for this locker. They said, yeah, there should have been a key in there. I said, I have no key, but here's the information I had with the lock. If you want to send me a replacement key. So they did. They sent me a replacement key. And a replacement combination lock.
Yeah, which really does you no good, because why are they sending you another lock? I mean, you'd have to be able to get the first one open order to replace that lock. But okay,
I digress. Evil. They're evil. Uh-huh. The locker lady, the customer service lady, her name's Roxana. And Roxana says that key should work on that lock. It's a master key. Problem is, this key...
gigantic.
Doesn't fit any lock. Doesn't fit the one they sent me. Doesn't fit the one that's on the locker.
If it doesn't fit,
you must acquit. She then says, to me, you know, could you send me a picture? And I said, well, it looks like a combination lock. Like, it's round. It has a dial on it.
There's numbers. There's a red.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
No, if it doesn't fit, I'm going to bang my head. So here's the deal. I got a package today that had a key in it and a lock in it. Somebody said, Derek grabbed me in the hallway and he says, hey, I accidentally got this box. It's for you. You know, and he hands it to me and I'm like, what could this be? And I shook it and it had a key in it. And I went down to Gliss's office down there and I said, Gliss, I'm so excited. How excited was I, Gliss?
Yeah, you were pretty excited. That's your spirits were up this morning, I would say.
Yeah, I was
psyched for the week. I was ready to go. Like, oh, this is a good start to the Monday.
We were coming in shots fired. I came around the corner right as you left Gliss's room there, and you go, it's a big day. It's a huge day. Things are looking up. It's going to be a fantastic week. You are not going to believe this. And I'm thinking, what? Did the Blazers just make a big trade? Like, what's happening? Nope.
I got the key.
Yes.
I got the key to get into the locker. It's like Geraldo getting into the vault, okay? And you know what the funny thing is?
There's
nothing in the locker. I would just like to put things in the locker. Like to put all my goodies in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I had Andro, I could put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had something cool to put in there, I'd put it in there. Like, you know, jar of peanut butter. I don't want Kellen to get into. I can put it in there. So... Gliss says, should I film you opening the lock? Which he should have.
Yeah.
Because I took the key out. It's a master key. It has some initials on it. SL20. Whatever that means. Could be blank out of luck 20. and I try to stick it in the lock. It doesn't fit.
It's huge. It's like not even the same. It's like not even in the same genre of keys.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
So either Roxana... is having some fun with me, or this thing is bust. Now, she also now has sent me what she says are alternate combinations to the lock that's supposed to be on there. I was under the impression a combination lock had one combination, but apparently there are alternate combinations. We're going to need a stethoscope and Kellen to break into this thing by the time this thing's over with. So there you go. I wanted to point out tomorrow on the show, we're going to have Gary Anderson on. We were going to have Gary Anderson and his wife, Stacy, in studio together on Valentine's Day.
Perfect.
I'm now told Stacy's not making the trip.
Ah.
But I was going to do kind of a bit. I was going to have a tablecloth and candlelight and kind of have Gary walk in and Stacy was going to be here. I think maybe we set it up anyway and let Gary walk into it and be like, oh, where's Stacy? But I'm told now she's not making the trip. I'm told they are still married by people at Oregon State. It's not like they're on the rocks or anything. She's just not making the trip for Valentine's Day to Portland to do a radio show. Mm. Apparently not enough romance in that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get Gary Anderson on the show tomorrow. Here's the catch, though. He wants to do 2:30, Gliss, not 2 o'clock. Can he do 2:30? We have anything that we do every day at 2:30 that we couldn't move?
We have a little segment called Kiki Reads the News, but we can certainly move it for Coach Anderson.
Kiki? Are you all right?
I am all right.
Did we bump you?
Yeah, we can. I'm flexible. Yeah? You tell me when to read news and I'll read it.
How about you read the news at 2 tomorrow instead of 2:30?
Boom.
And then Gary Anderson comes in here.
Done.
Brings the heat at 2
Special
o'clock.
Special Valentine's Done. Edition of Kiki Reads the News.
You go early.
Perfect.
You go early.
It's all good.
Hey, you have any Valentine's? You got flowers to tell people about.
I do. I do have some flowers.
Need? Tell the guys on the show what to do so they look good tomorrow.
Well, yes. Well, first of all, guys, please, listen. The thing about flowers is we're so fragmented now.
Yeah.
Right? We got our devices all the time. We're doing this. We're doing that. And people are always trying to, like, one-up each other.
Everybody's going to send sending electronic flowers is not the same as sending real flowers.
What you want to do is do what works. It's tried and true. Send someone flowers. Holly and Kim sent me flowers a couple weeks ago. They surprised me. They were at the front desk when I came in that day. And it was awesome. I was like, wow, look at that. It was just, it's really uplifting. So I highly recommend my friends at Kern Park Flower Shop. I know you've used them.
I use them. I've used them for years.
Yep. And in fact, they've been doing this for 5 generations, over 100 years. So there's Holly, there's Kim, Holly's husband, Chris, also does the deliveries. He delivered Gowie's, you know, they're huge supporters of the Bald Face Truth Foundation. We had a great time at the Super Bowl party with Chris and Holly. So they just do great work.
The bottom line is, I guess you could send flowers in a box. I have received flowers that came in a box. I'm a guy. I can't imagine a woman who is wanting to feel, because the whole point is you want her to feel special, right?
Absolutely.
You want to say, I took time. I thought about you. I went out of my way. I did something. Don't do what I did one year. One year I sat down with Anna and we went, we're not going to celebrate Valentine's Day. We're going to be that couple. We're not going to be commercial. We're not going to do. And she was on board with it until she went to work. And everybody else got flowers.
Right,
everybody
right.
else had a Valentine. And at the end of the night, she was like, you know what? And I could just tell you guys, do not make that mistake.
There's definitely something
stupid.
Very special about getting flowers.
I was stupid. And at that hour, I couldn't call and be like, hey, deliver, whatever. So take the time, listen to Kiki. And it's a phone call that you can make right now.
Absolutely. You can reach him at 503-771-9000. That's 771-9000. You can also reach them at KernParkPortlandFlowers.com. They're a brick and mortar store. They've been doing it for over 100 years. Like I said, there's a fantastic story on their Facebook page about their grandmother, Kim and Holly's grandmother, and sort of the transformation that that place over there, that their shop on Holgate went through. And like I said, it's just I'm honored to be able to talk about them because I love working with them and I love what they bring to the community and I love what they bring to the Bald Face Truth Foundation.
So if it's your mother, your daughter, your personal assistant, your husband, your coworker, your wife, your girlfriend, your other girlfriend, whatever the case may be,
absolutely.
Whatever the occasion.
And you know, Kiki's a dog person and it sounds crazy, but there was a guy out of state who his dog was sick and he actually sent flowers to his dog.
You can do whatever.
Yeah.
But and people use them year round. But Holly, she literally texted me and she was like, what are we doing this year? And it's that personal service that you're not going to get at some 1-800, I'll send them some crap in a box.com, whatever.
Absolutely. I've been texting with her throughout the show here and she was talking about, you know, the business and they were open on Sunday. They're never open on Sundays, but they were open yesterday to make sure that they were able to serve everyone.
Do
in the
they
Northwest.
Serve the entire Portland metropolitan area?
Yep, absolutely.
They'll deliver anywhere.
Yep, absolutely.
So do that at 771-9000.
771-9000.
Call Kim. She's blowing her up right now.
Holly, give him a call right now. Be a hero. Come on,
right,
I've been telling you about this for weeks.
That was public service announcement, okay? We do that every year. Like, don't screw this up. Gliss, don't screw this up. Kellen, don't screw this up. Okay, you can do no wrong here by just doing that. At a bare minimum, because I told people, it's funny, I got a text the other day from Mike, who's a listener of the show, and he sent me a text from Swank and Swine, okay? So this restaurant is in the Paramount Hotel, bottom level of the Paramount Hotel. On one side, you have Swank, which is a really nice restaurant with a wine bar. On the other side, you have Swine, which is like the whiskey bar. It's got a saloon kind of oaky whiskey feel to it. Both are really cool spaces. But Mike sent me a picture because they were celebrating Valentine's Day early. because his wife travels and he works and he travels. And so he said they went over the weekend to Swank, and he sent me a photo from there. It's just a phenomenal little scene, little setting. So people who want to still try to get in on a reservation or maybe celebrate your Valentine's Day on another day, you can go to swankandswine.com to do that. So we're making you smart. Flowers at Portland, Kern Park Flower Shop. Yep. Swank for dinner, swine for maybe a
there you go
little atmosphere.
I don't
afterwards.
Know how else we can tee people up.
That's all fresh. That's all local. That's all handcrafted. It's, you know, it's this is what we do. We just want to make you smart. You listen to the damn show. You should be smarter because of it.
That's right.
We were talking about Adele. She started over. I was at a concert one time. This happened. This was years and years ago. I was at a Goo Goo Dolls concert in Tallahassee, Florida.
Wow.
And the guy did, they were at the end of their tour. They had been like 15 or 20 cities. They were tired. And he came on. I can't even remember the guy's name, but he came on, the lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls, and they started playing. And he was about a song and a half into the evening, and he just threw his guitar down, and he stopped. And he said, I'm sorry, cut the music. He said, we're at stop number 22 of this tour. That was some crap right there. That was bad energy. We can do better than that. And we're starting over. And he started the whole, like, from song one back over. And you know what? I think the crowd appreciated it. Adele last night.
Yeah,
she
absolutely.
Stops on this George Michael tribute.
She did.
Starts over.
Absolutely. And in fact, when we were in Phoenix, she did the same thing. She actually sang the wrong lyrics. And so she stopped and she started laughing. She's like, I'm so sorry. And we didn't care because now this just means we get to see more of her. But so yesterday... and I'm sure a lot of you have seen this. She was singing and she didn't like the way it was going. I don't know if there was a technical glitch. I do think she was a little bit off pitch. And so she basically fell on the sword and decided to start over. And I have it right here if you want to take a listen.
Yeah, I'm going
to
listen.
I know it's live TV. I'm sorry. I need to start again. I can't do it again like last year. I'm sorry for swearing and I'm sorry for starting again. Can we please start it again? I'm sorry. I can't mess this up for him. I'm sorry. I can't. I'm sorry for swearing. I'm really sorry. I'm sorry, Ken.
Now, and if you remember last year...
She guilty of anything there?
No. She's guilty of getting it right, I think.
Okay.
So last year, and I think this is also, this plays into this, because last year she was singing and the production folks had put a microphone, they had taped it inside the piano, and during the performance, the tape didn't work and the microphone fell on the strings. And so every time they did that, the audio was just awful and it completely threw her off. And I saw her on the Ellen show the next day and she said, if I ever do that again and I get an opportunity, I'll just start over.
My big issue was, how could you have any kind of glitch given, like, they must have the most amazing sound people, like even the Lady Gaga Metallica thing. Didn't they have a microphone problem or something?
There was quite a few glitches. Yeah. So that, I mean, I think that's the thing about live TV too. And if you've worked in live TV, I think you're a little bit more forgiving because things happen. But yeah, I mean, the microphone didn't work for Metallica. What wasn't it, Kellen? I think it was Metallica.
Yeah, James Hetfield's mic didn't work. And he had to share the mic with Lady Gaga. And then they finally turned it on into like the second verse. And that's why he kicked it down and threw his guitar off the stage. And...
yeah, frustrating. I mean, think about that. I mean, the amount of people that are watching. And granted, I do think that she was off key a bit. But I also think that she sang a lyric the way that it was supposed to be sung. Yeah. And there was a bad word. And so then that kind of threw her off. And so she just basically asked for a mulligan.
Who is better, Bruno Mars, Adele, or Beyonce?
Just last night. Bruno Mars was great. I didn't... Go ahead, Kellen.
No.
No?
Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, I the song for me for Adele was okay. But I think Bruno Mars stole the show last night.
Gliss?
Yeah, I agree. Bruno Mars had the best energy.
How about Beyonce?
I think like, she...
It's all about Beyonce, though, isn't it?
She's amazing.
She was great. It just wasn't necessarily my choice of... I didn't love the song, but I do love Beyonce. She's great.
Yeah, and I think she has to be... She's on half mute right now. She's got twins, so she can't do her normal... you know, normally she's running around, she's swinging her hair, and she's chaos, dancing man. And doing all that stuff.
That it made me really nervous to see a pregnant woman. She was on that chair.
That freaked me
where
out.
Where it went backwards at like a almost like fully back, and she's like hanging off at the end of that thing.
If I were Jay-Z, I would be like, no, do not do that. I that freaked me out.
Yeah,
that was hard
but
to watch.
Anybody who's ever been around a pregnant woman knows you're not really telling her what to do. you're there. And you're nodding a lot.
Uh-huh.
Chris, you know,
uh-huh.
You can, you know, and you go into the gym. I'll tell you, I've been in the gym and I've seen pregnant women, like really pregnant women, like on the stair climber or on the treadmill.
Okay.
And I'm always going like, gosh, is their doctor okay with that or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
But you find that like these are women, if this is what they did, like they're not suddenly working out for the first time, 7 months pregnant or whatever.
Right.
But if this is what they did before, that like their doctors or physicians will often tell them, hey, you know, if you're just continuing your routine, that's not a bad thing. All right, coming up, Kiki's going to read the news, and we're going to talk about why college football is out of control in a good way.
It's Norm McDonald. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Just got an email from a listener who wanted to know, hey, where do you go for your physical therapy? Because he heard me talking about why it matters to get your physical therapy someplace that, well, let's be real. The physical therapy wellness area of medicine is growing business, and so you have to find a practice that is committed to helping athletes and people with active lifestyles. I found thecorept.com. They save the athlete inside of you. That's their priority. Their motto is saving the athlete inside of you, and that's what they aim to do there. So if you're a professional athlete or a weekend warrior or somebody like me who's just trying to get back to the lifestyle that you led, they're dedicated to it. They'll get you back to peak, pain-free performance. Some people say it. The Core does it. So whether it's physical therapy or massage therapy or acupuncture or orthopedic aquatic rehabilitation or running programs or baseball or softball or, frankly, basketball, go to thecorept.com. That's Core spelled K-O-R. Thecorept.com. They've got clinics and locations in Tigard, in Beaverton, and in Hillsboro. And when you walk through the doors, you'll understand this is a place that's different than other places. Thecorept.com. Keke, you're going to read some news for us.
I sure am.
I'm stoked about this.
All right.
Before you read that, I got to tell you why college football is out of control.
All right.
I tease that. The scoring average in college football has increased to historical measures. For the first time in history, average scoring of a Division I college football team surpassed 30 points per game. The final stats that were audited and released by the NCAA today showed that the scoring average of 30.04 points per game per team marked a milestone in an offensive revolution that began probably 15 years ago. Seven times since the year 2000, we've had a new per-team scoring average record. So this is the seventh time in 15 years that the record's been set.
Mm-hmm.
In the previous 63 years, the record had only been set 19 times. In the year 2000, scoring averages hit about 26 points. Then we got 27. In 2007, we got 28. 2012, 29.5. And this year, we got 30.
Wow.
30 points. Six teams. And, no, 58 individual teams averaged more than 30 points. Six conferences averaged more than 30 points. And does anybody know the highest scoring conference in America? If you want to see points, where do you go? You go to the Big 12.
Okay.
33.58 points per team. And by the way, among the Power 5 conferences, only one conference did not average 30 points.
It ACC.
Is the Big 10.
Oh.
Averaged 27.9 points. We've got teams that are running the ball more effectively, teams that are passing the ball more effectively, rules that have been put in place to inhibit the defenses, but we're seeing points, and we're seeing offensive records. And by the way, we have five offensive records set among the top 15 categories: yards per pass attempt, total offense, yards per play, and touchdowns per game were all new records this year.
Do you attribute that to player safety concerns?
It might be that they're going easier on quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and defenses are maybe a little afraid to right. lay a helmet on somebody.
Exactly. Someone coming across yeah. the middle. I think that the advantage might be.
I think you'd have a hard time proving it, but it would yeah, make sense.
It makes sense to me. That's logically when you were, you know, doing all those numbers, that's what popped into my head.
By the way, they're saying that the, you know, people would generally say, oh, that means that they're throwing the ball more. It's mm-hmm. not truly really true. The yards, average yards per game in rushing and passing have the smallest gap between them since 1998. And that's crazy. The NCAA Statistics Department has been working on this, and they say officially college football is out of control offensively.
Wow.
But I'm watching.
That's not
and
a
you're
bad
watching.
Thing.
Yeah, people are watching.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. That's cool.
Kiki's going to read some news now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth. Brought to you by Kern Park Flower Shop. Be the hero this Valentine's Day and let Kern Park Flower Shop deliver high-quality flowers to your loved one. Call them today at 503-771-9000.
Well, Saturday Night Live has enjoyed some ratings increase in the last recent weeks with everything that's going on in the world. And Saturday was no, they certainly didn't deviate the Saturday. Let's just say that. They had Ed Sheeran, Melissa McCarthy. She did round two of her impersonation
yep.
of Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Take a listen.
Now, I'd like to begin with the president's schedule. 3 p.m., President Trump is going to meet with the leader from Central Asia, President... Oh, boy. Osmat Bek Atamad Yemebey. Okay, to discuss the unrest in Kazakhstan. Specifically in... Jesus. So, write that. And they will be joined by his wife. I'm just going to pass on that one. You know what? Let's just call her Connie.
She's funny.
She's hilarious. She is so good. Yeah. Did you watch?
I haven't. I always watch it late because
okay.
I'm working on the weekends and whatever, so I don't get a chance to be sitting around drinking beers watching Saturday Night Live.
All right. All
some
right.
other people I know.
Touche, touche.
So... here's the thing. Saturday Night Live's coming back, and it's using people like Melissa McCarthy and Alec Baldwin
mm-hmm.
to do it. This isn't like the traditional old school, like young kids Saturday Night Live cast. They're using stars.
Yeah, they're seasoned veterans.
Paying money for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it worth it?
I think so.
Saved the show, didn't it?
I think they're knocking it out of the park. Kate McKinnon, too. She can. I am convinced that she can essentially play any character that they throw at her.
It's talent.
So, yeah, it's fun to watch.
I just miss
sure.
the way they used to develop young talent, though, because I feel like it's lost its fastball. And, you know, it's back. It's
yeah.
back, but it's back with stars. So I wonder if that's sustainable or if they're just going, hey, man, we got to make hay when we can.
Yeah.
What is Alec Baldwin making per
oh,
episode?
Oh, my gosh.
Anybody
yeah,
know?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to get our staff on that. In the spirit of Valentine's Day, I wanted to let you know this story.
Yeah.
There's a man in France who is suing Uber because he claims that the app essentially outed his affair with another woman, which resulted in he and his wife getting a divorce. Now, it sounds like what happened was he had borrowed his wife's phone and downloaded the app and used it and then deleted it from her phone. Mm. But she was still getting notifications as to where he was being picked up and what time, which caused some domestic problems at home.
He was taking Uber to this rendezvous
yeah,
point or whatever.
Late night, and she knew, and the wife was getting all the notifications. If you have any idea how Uber works, it sends you an email, tells you what time they picked you up, where they dropped you off. So, yeah. So that guy's in trouble. He's suing them for a lot. Though.
Is he gonna it's win? Like, is he gonna win?
I don't know.
Did Uber screw
I don't
that
know.
Up?
I don't think so. But
it's like, it's
I think he screwed up. Why is he blaming Uber?
By the way,
he blame himself.
I do know how much Alec Baldwin makes per appearance as the president-elect.
How much?
The president. $1,400.
Oh.
That's what he told the New York Times.
Oh.
If you can believe that.
Yeah. Hmm. Fake news? Is that fake news?
I don't know. $1,400? That just doesn't seem very...
No, well, he's doing it for free. Can you imagine what it's doing to his career?
Yeah.
He doesn't need the money.
Is that what it's about on SNL? I thought it would be costing him like $50,000 for that performance. That's what I thought.
I don't know, though. I think this is what this has done to his career. I would think that he'd do it for free.
So Jay Mohr, who is a former SNL cast member, he said that the starting salary on SNL was $5,500 a week. Then the highest salary was $12,000 a week.
Really?
Yeah, the most senior person. But it leads you to other things, like movies and whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like being a Blazer dancer or an Oakland Raiderette.
Okay.
You're a Raiderette, they pay you $50 a game, but you get appearances, you know, and you make some money elsewhere. Okay. Back to your story. Should Uber be...
No, I don't think so at all. The guy's an idiot. I think it's pretty funny, really. Yeah. Technology. We talked about this last week. We were talking about technology, and this kind of bit this guy in the you-know-what.
Yep.
He's in trouble. So... in other news, there was an Irishman. So follow this. I swear this is not a joke. There was an Irishman who went to Australia on vacation, and he decided to FaceTime his parents, who are, you know, they're probably in their 70s, I'm guessing. So, again, this is kind of a technology thing. What he failed to mention to them what he was doing is he was actually jumping out of a plane. He was skydiving.
Oh, boy.
And so he told him he was in a bus. And all of a sudden, he jumps out of this airplane. And I can't really play the clips for you because there's a lot of profanity. But yeah. I did tweet out the link. But it's pretty hilarious. These parents are going, oh, my goodness, what is happening? The dad was really good. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
You didn't look at the link that I sent.
Nope.
Nope.
I didn't. But you know what? It's good on him. But everybody's always using technology to try to shock people, you know?
That's pretty funny. In other news, Derek Jeter and his model wife are expecting their first daughter. My point to that is I don't know if it's his first daughter, but maybe it is. But so that's exciting for them.
Yeah.
You were going to talk about that earlier in the show. I thought maybe you teased it and then we got away from it.
Yeah, it happens.
Mm-hmm. We get distracted.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
By
all
we,
good.
You mean me.
I do it too. Also, here locally, they've announced when the naked bike ride's going to be. It's going to be June 24th, 2017. So if you're out and about that night, you might want to cover your eyes. Or if you're into that kind of thing, then you've got some pretty good people watching. So mark that on your calendar. Or not.
Yeah.
Are you grumpy today or what?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
This is your segment. This is your time to shine.
Right,
carry this segment. Come on. This is you.
In other news, yes. Lady Gaga will be playing Wrigley Field. August 25th, which is kind of cool because this is the first time a female headliner will play Wrigley Field. So they've been doing that a lot. The problem that I have with that is that it kind of ruins the grass. So
you sound like an old guy on your lawn.
I know. Well, it does. You go into a baseball game, you want to see a beautiful Wrigley Field. And last year they had to actually replace the turf. I believe it was after Eddie Vedder.
Really?
Played there.
What
yeah.
What the hell is he doing? Doesn't he just stand on? Do they have to let people on the field?
No, they're down on the field. The bands.
Oh,
yeah. No. Yeah. People are standing there on the field. I don't.
Yeah,
you know?
That's like being at a cemetery.
What? Cemetery.
Yeah. I've been on the field at Wrigley.
Uh-huh.
It's a surreal feeling to be like at batting practice at Wrigley. I was on the field at batting practice for Wrigley, and it was when Soso was with the with the Cubs. I was covering baseball, and I stood literally against the batting cage while he took batting practice.
Nice.
And you stand there, and you realize, and you start at some point going, Babe Ruth stood here.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like you start to have those moments where you're looking around, going like. You know, this was a big deal.
Huge.
Like, who hit balls here? Ernie Banks was here. Mm-hmm. You know, Mays was here. It was Clemente was here. And you start to look around and you're like, you feel like you're in a sacred place.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wouldn't, even if it was nighttime and you'd had a lot of beers, you wouldn't like say, hey, this is a good place in the outfield to take a leak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd go use the restroom because it's Wrigley.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I had an opportunity last summer it was 2 summers ago. To go onto the field, and I stood in the batter's box, and I actually put my hand down and I rubbed it in the dirt, just kind of for the same reasons that you just spoke of.
Yeah,
it was pretty neat. Yeah, they were taking batting practice, and in fact, ball kind of came over. They were playing the Reds. I don't remember who it was. I think it was one of the pitchers. And the ball came over to me, and he kind of looked at, you know, me as if to throw him the ball. And he was kind of like rolling his eyes, like, you know, and I kind of chucked him at it. You know, I gave it to him, and he could tell he was like, oh, she can throw. That's kind of funny. Yeah. So there's that. And let's see, what else do we have going on? I am kind of curious to think if people think that Adele stopping and starting, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. I mean, she made history last night. She's the first person to sweep album of the year, record of the year, and song of the year twice. She did it back in 2012 for her album 21. But what I don't really understand, and Kellen, you're a music guy. I Googled it, album of the year and record of the year. That seems a little redundant to me. I don't understand why they have that as two separate two different categories, because isn't that kind of splitting hairs? Isn't that essentially the same thing?
To me, it would be, yeah.
Yeah, but when I looked it up, it essentially says the same thing. I clicked out of it already, but I don't know. I just thought that was kind of strange, because isn't that, I mean, what am I missing?
So there are
here?
Two different winners for each of those categories?
Yeah, album of the year and record of the year.
So Adele won album of the year?
And record of the year.
So she got two awards for
right,
the...
for, yeah. That's
odd. And by the way, shouldn't Beyonce have won album of the year?
I think so. Adele thinks so.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
A lot of people on Twitter right now saying, hey, you know, it should have gone to Beyonce. Why does Adele, so people love Adele. What's, mm-hmm. And it's like Westbrook and Durant. Why can't they just be great? Everybody's great. You know, like we have to determine who is the greatest. What is the difference between album of the year and record of the year, Kellen?
Record of the year is awarded to for a single.
Okay.
Album of the year is for the whole collection. Oh. I don't know why they wouldn't just call it Song of the Year.
Isn't that confusing? Because there is Song
isn't
of the
there
Year.
Isn't there Song of the Year,
is,
too?
Yeah, there is Song
I
of the Year.
I think there is.
We're really confused here. That's why we're a sports show, not a music show.
Record of the Year is for one track. Okay? Record means a particular song. That's what it says here.
Right, but then what's Song of the Year? Because that seems a little fishy, too.
Oh, so Song of the Year goes to the writers. Record of the Year goes to the performer.
Boom. He got it. Gosh. See, we just had to work it out.
I was going to kill
me. We just had to work it out.
It took four brains.
Can anybody get the combination open on this
I know.
Locker?
Back to that.
Now the company, the reason why I was distracted a few minutes ago.
You're a little grumpy,
the lady at the company is saying, well, how long has this been a problem? Mm-hmm. Like now suddenly that she's going to go, I can't get the damn thing open. It's your problem kind of thing. And
who's
I'm like,
passing the
from
buck?
The first time that we contacted you and said we couldn't get the damn thing open.
I know.
Send me another key.
This is going to be big stuff when this actually is open.
Not really. People aren't going to care, but it's my problem.
I fail to see how long it's been closed is relevant, though. I mean, Al Capone's vault was closed for how long? And
I guess she's
Geraldo
trying to
still
get
wanted
at, is this a manufacturer defect or is this a me defect?
I think it's she suspects user error, and I think the...
Here's what I think happened. I think they sent me a lock that doesn't match the combination they sent me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think happened.
Well, and the key is just completely, you could throw the key away because that has absolutely no bearing in that at all.
The key doesn't fit anything. And it just may be that this is a small order to them. It's one locker. I'm sure they deal with schools and whatever else. And they're just trying to be like, man, can you just go away?
You know what, though?
Please.
Yeah.
Please go away.
I'm sorry about that.
So what else you got? You got anything else?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Adele again. You know what? I do have this for you, though. What I have to say to you about your locker. This is Adele. This is what she has to say.
You gonna play it or are you just gonna keep setting it up?
Sorry.
That's it.
Well,
sorry.
All right. I wish Adele the best. If you're a Blazer fan, I wish you the best as well. My final thoughts on the actions of today relate to your general manager, Neil Olshey, because for Blazer fans who are optimistic about today's trade, and you know what? If I have to fall on one side of this equation or not, I think this was a good trade for the Blazers. You had a dead-end path that this organization was on. They ended up saying, we're not going to go all the way to the end of the dead end, which is a meeting with the Warriors, and then turn back. We're going to turn back now. And they trade Mason Plumlee, a player that they were not going to be able to re-sign in the offseason because he's going to command $60 million plus, maybe Allen Crabbe money. And you look at the three, you know, they have three first round picks, and you say, that's great. They've got the ability to have three teenagers come in and save this franchise. And that's just part of it. But my question, again, comes back to Neil Olshey. Is he the right guy to fix the Blazers organization? Is he the guy that's got the answers? Will he make the right picks? I have reasonable doubt there. And I'm going to lay this one at the feet of the irregular guys who are coming up here.
next on 750 The Game. But tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Just give me a yes, I believe in Neil Olshay, or no, I don't. Tell me, vote yay or nay on whether or not you think he's the right guy to fix this. Do you still believe? Is it in Neil I trust or not? Leave it here.